And welcome back to episode 136 of the Weekly Tech Wrap with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Oh, it is a sweltering day here in the studio.
We have sun.
Yes, that orange ball of doom in the sky is causing heat. Although I shouldn't really complain, you know, it's the UK. We like to moan about the weather.
We moan if it's cold. We just moan.
It is indeed. And given the fact it is now June, of course, we have had WWDC. You know, summer has officially started. You know, I think that's always a good indicator, isn't it? Summer's here with WWDC.
It is, yeah.
So we now have, all of the latest updates for you from WWDC, which the keynote was held Monday this week. So what was that, the 6th of June? Or was it the 5th? I can't remember. Was it the 5th or 6th?
5th, 6th, 7th, 5th.
Oh, God, brain. It was the 5th. It was the 5th. I don't even know what day of the week it is. It was the 5th. No, it was the 5th. And we've had time now to process all of the updates, haven't we? I am even running one of the betas as we speak on device. We'll come back to that more in a little while. But we're going to take a walk through this podcast. We're going to talk hardware first. We're going to talk Air 15, Mac Studio, Mac Pro. Then we'll give you a nice little roundup across the board, across iOS 17, iPad OS 17, tvOS 17, WatchOS 10, macOS Sonoma, which I thought was going to be Napa, but, you know, there you go.
Of course, outcry with that one.
And Vision Pro. So let's kick off then with the new MacBook Air 15. Actually, before we do that, Carl, tell me, what did you think of the overall event?
Well, as usual, it was very, very slick, well put together, choreographed. But overall, I think it was a bit of a disappointment.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the one more thing, the Vision Pro, was the star of the show by a mile. Whether it was any good when we actually get it, I don't know, but it looked good. But the software was, there was just nothing there, really. Exception of WatchOS, which has a bit of an overhaul. The rest of it was just a bit meh. And the same for the hardware. I mean, we've got the Mac Pro, and we'll talk about that. But I think a lot of people who are after the Mac Pro are going to be disappointed in it. And the other stuff was, meh. was my takeaway, but I don't know about you.
First off, as we've talked about many a time before, it was slick. High-end Hollywood production values. Everything that we've come to expect from an Apple keynote or a glorified commercial, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
The transitions were great. Craig Federighi, definitely is a CEO in waiting, in my opinion. He has got charisma. He's got stage presence. On the other side, you're right. Perhaps when we get into the meat of it in a minute, the hardware releases, apart from one of them, I think you're right, probably could have been done with a press release, quite frankly.
All three of them.
Possibly, maybe. I don't know. Maybe one of them. I reckon the Mac Studio particularly, but we'll come back to that. Software-wise, I think we saw a good roundup of ancillary features. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Clearly this was in the old Intel, like an Intel TikTok. This was a tick rather than a tock, wasn't it? I think we're looking at, where have all the devs gone? Well, all the devs have been working on Vision Pro.
Yeah. There's nothing in there that made me immediately go, I'm going to get that beta on download. I'm like, I'll wait a month or two or whatever. I'm not in any rush for it.
No, I think you and I both were watching it, and there's a lot of features you and I both went, oh, that's really handy, or I really like that. But I don't think there was anything you and I, from a software perspective, went, wow, I want that now, was it,
No, exactly. Exactly. No. And as we'll come back to with iPadOS, I can't even install it anyway.
definitely. So on that point then, let's get straight in then with the new MacBook Air 15-inch, the world's thinnest 15-inch laptop.
Not just the world's thinnest, the world's best 15-inch laptop as well, according to Apple. it's just the 16-inch Mac but shrunk down, isn't it, really? There's not a lot to say, really. It's just shrunk down slightly. It's got an M2 chip, so it's got the 8-core CPU, 10-core GPU, 16-core neural engine, etc. It's 15-inch. I mean, it is thin. It's 11.5 millimeters thick. Say, Apple is saying it's the world's thinnest. Weighs just over £3, so fairly light. It has two Thunderbolt ports, MagSafe, still has a headphone jack, surprisingly. Yeah, comes in Midnight, Starlight, Space Gray, and Silver. Yours for $1,300. I'm not sure what else there is to say on it.
Well, I mean, look, my first head thing with you was like, why does this exist, does it? I think I well,
yeah.
but on the other hand, I think my also comment, looking back at my notes here, was like, you know, as a daily driver, pretty decent machine, to be honest with you. If you don't need anything but a laptop that does pretty much everything standard, so Office Suite or equivalent, SaaS applications. In fact, beyond that, it would still blow most things away. It's got an M2 chip, as you say, you know, the 8-core CPU, 10-core GPU, 16-core neural engine. You know, it can drive, you know, it's got two of the USB ports. It's got all the stuff you'd expect. It is, you know, quite frankly, it is a pretty powerful machine with that M2 chip in it. Yeah. But it's just, for me, they're like, you know, for transportation, it's a bit bigger. I guess they were kind of pushing the education angle, weren't they? Because that was like one of the things about the education pricing came up, wasn't it?
Yep.
The fact that it's, less than 12 millimeters thick was amazing. I mean, the size of it, it's mind-bogglingly thin. My worry, though, is it going to be bottlenecked, you know, like we saw with the other Airs, do you remember?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd hope they've revisited the heat dissipation, because they have a giant aluminium chassis, and it doesn't seem like they're really using it to dissipate the heat very well. But, I mean, it's a larger chassis than the 14. It's an Air, so it's probably not going to be driven as hard as a Pro. No. So hopefully you'll be fine. And Apple did return with their stupid performance metrics again, didn't they?
Oh, God, yes.
The one that I think I commented on was, what did they say? I don't have this written down, but it was something along the lines of, it's X times faster than the most popular Windows i7 laptop or something that.
The best, I believe the statement was 25% brighter, 40% thinner, twice as fast as, and half a pound lighter than the best-selling 15-inch Intel Core i7 PC laptop. Yeah. No make, no model, as you say, just a...
As we commented, the most popular when it comes to Windows is quite often the most cheapest.
Yeah, you know.
They're bought by the masses, as long as they're cheap, cheerful, and get, you know, the web browser works okay, they fly off the shelves.
Yeah. I personally don't doubt that it is more powerful, because let's be honest, an M2 chip in most scenarios is pretty powerful compared to even i7.
It is, but I think if they compared it to a $1,300, I can't remember what spec you get for $1,300, but a similarly priced premium Windows laptop, a lot of those faster bits or lighter bits may not have been so big, or may not have been valid.
Yeah, you like every Apple metric, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt. You know. But, you know, on the face of it, I don't think anybody can doubt they are not slow machines.
Oh, and, you know, not at all. And the battery life is phenomenal.
And it is. And you compare this thing with up to 24 gig of memory, I mean, which is, you know...
Was that a max on it? Yeah, I didn't
that was the max, yeah. The
specs on that one, yeah.
24 and 2 terabytes of storage. Now, at that kind of money, you might as well look at a Pro. But anyway, that point aside...
Yeah, because you obviously can't upgrade the storage. So you need to make sure you buy the right storage now.
Yeah, but what I would say is, you know, if you wanted a daily driver machine, and you're not
with a big
pro,
display,
yeah, with a big display, and you're not a pro in inverted commas, and you know, that's a hell of a machine, 24 gig of RAM, you know, with one of those M2 machines. And you know, I was looking earlier at other machines. I'll talk a little bit more about when we come to the studios and that, you know, kind of having my desktop. But yeah, pricing wise, again, you know, Apple don't make, no matter what they say, they are not playing to the masses here. This is still an expensive machine, but I guess the $1,200 the $1,300 starting price is probably equivalent to a Windows machine of similar specification and speed. But you know, look, as you say, not much more to say about it. You know, it is exactly what the Air was we saw before, just a bigger, lighter version of it. But still,
sell by the bucket load.
It will sell by the bucket load. They will absolutely fly off the shelves. And again, nice colors as well, let's be honest.
Exactly, yeah, we love a nice bit colorful laptop.
Yeah. And what just makes me chuckle is that they got away, didn't they? They got on the Pro side, they jumped up to a 16 inch and moved away from the 13, yet you know, this, now they've brought the 15 inch back. That was the part I just kind of, I don't know. To me, there's not really much difference between the 16 and 15 inch in real world scenarios, is there? Let's be fair.
Probably but, not. No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the 15 inch MacBook Air, the world's thinnest.
Yeah.
We'll, you know, once some more real life performance reviews come out, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, that's, I guess, the start of a 10 there. So what have we got next?
It is. Well, we have the Mac Studio, the new one, which is exactly the same as the old one, just with an M2 Max and an M2 Ultra now. So the real highlight was obviously just announcing the M2 Max and the M2 Ultra, which are taking the M2 Pro and doubling and quadrupling it, aren't they?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so I mean, the M2 Max, you get, is it 12-core CPU, 30-core GPU, up to 96 gig of RAM. The Ultra, you get 24-core CPU, 60-core GPU, and up to 192 gig of RAM. But there is a high-end version of the Ultra chip that gives you 76-core GPU rather than 60. They have phoned in some Wi-Fi 6E and Bluetooth 5.3. But as far as I go, those were the only changes I could see. And again, starting at, what, $2,000?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, nothing really has changed massively beyond...
That was a press release. That was just chuck an email out with that one.
You know, effectively, this is the V2 of the studio, isn't it? Which we kind of all expected. We knew it was coming.
Did we? I thought maybe they might have done away with the Pro, but then we were saying the Pro wasn't going to arrive, and then we were shocked the Pro arrived, and so did the Mac Studio. And we were like, what?
We'll talk about the Pro in a minute, and I don't want to shoot my point, if you will, before we get there. I mean, let's just forget the Pro for a second, yeah?
Yeah.
In my opinion, the top-end version of this, with the M2 Ultra, 192 gig of RAM, and as much storage as you can stick in it, is pretty much the machine for, let's just say, and again, I'm going to be very categorized. If we talk about the Pro, your average audience for a Mac Pro, I'm not talking the Pixar style people, I'm talking the people who are wanting to do, you know, video editing, all that kind of stuff. Majority of them who are looking for higher machines, the studio in its ultra blow most tasks away.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, you can have, what was it, 6 ProRes displays, XDR ProRes displays. That's 100 million pixels.
Yeah, you know. I know, it's a beast, and it will chew through that video processing, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely nuts. And quite frankly, you know, even an M2 Max with the top end Max, isn't it? You know, that's one hell of a machine. In its own right. I really like the studio. Question its existence a little bit when we come to the next machine we're going to talk about in a second. Mm. But then I also question that's existence as well. But this is what I mean. My view is the studio personally should be in the space that's occupied by the Mac Pro. My view is that Apple, and you know, we'll get more into this in a second, Apple needs to, I think, really think about who are they really targeting now, quite frankly. Because you've got the high end, you can get a Mac Mini with does M2 Pro as well.
Does M2 Pro, yeah.
Yeah, so you can get a Mac Mini with M2 Pro, you can spec that up. That again is gonna chew through, you know, most people's video editing. You know, unless you're Marcus Brownlee or something like that, you know, or Linus Tech Tips or whatever, doing high end video or whatever, you know, it's fine. The studio is definitely gonna be there. And I'm pretty confident, and again, I go out on a limb saying this, I'm imagine if you had a couple of really tricked out studios, you could probably do some close to Hollywood editing. I bet it's not far away. You know,
no, exactly.
The power that's there. And it was interesting, they mentioned about DaVinci, didn't they, as well, when they were talking about it.
Yeah, DaVinci Resolve's a big one. Contemplating buying studio. I'm going to argue about it. I've been thinking about it for months. And it's a value for money. I mean, look at DaVinci Resolve. I know they make their money really from all the hardware they sell, you know, the video decks. But their top-of-the-range studio, everything is, what, £300?
Yeah.
Lifetime license. That's crazy. So, you know, because they've just released a load of AI generative stuff, which has obviously got me a bit interested in actually buying the studio license.
I mean, and given, you know, and it was interesting that Apple referenced that in the kind of the same breath as Final Cut, didn't they, and things like that. And it was talked around from a kind of, you know, a rendering capability, wasn't it, and those sort of things, which I thought was quite smart on Apple's point. You know, obviously for them it's all about trying to show that they're not, you know, blowing the competition out of the water, that, you know, they're open market. But it was nice to see.
And if you have DaVinci on the iPad Pros now,
you can got an M chip,
you can get DaVinci as well, just like obviously Final Cut's out on the iPad now as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things that was mentioned as well, you know, from a software perspective, you know, Final Cut Pro and Logic was there as well, you know, with their touch versions. Again, they were released by press release beforehand, but they did still reference them in the event, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
But yeah, the Studio, you know, again, super powerful machine. For that, I guess, you know, top 10% of users, this is going to allow, that's going to cover 99% of them as well, you know. If I could afford one, you know, and I probably could afford one, but I wouldn't be able to afford anything else, I would be tempted to buy one, genuinely. And I am genuinely tempted to buy a Studio, quite, to be honest with you. But I think what puts me off a little bit is that, and again, you know, this is why the Pro exists, where we're going to kind of lead into in a second, is you are locking yourself in with Apple. So if I was going to splash cash, I'd want to go as, I want to stretch my money as far as I could get from a spec perspective around RAM and storage. That would be my personal view, at least.
Yeah, there's no upgrading later, so.
No, not at all. So then, Mac Studio gets a second generation update with the M2 Max and M2 Ultra, which again, no real big surprise, given that, you know, it's there.
We knew it was coming.
And, you know, it's, you know, it's again a beast of a machine. So then, talking of beasts of machines, then the cheese grater is back.
It is. So they've taken that Mac Studio we just talked about and shoved it in the cheese grater with lots of space left, haven't they? So with that space, they've added, what's it, six PCI Express Gen 4 slots.
Yes, they have. Yeah.
Well,
technically speaking, there are
technically speaking, there's seven. There's seven. Yeah. One of them's for the add-on card, because the add-on card gives you, what are they calling it, the I/O card? Or it gives you 8 Thunderbolt ports and 2 10 gigabit NICs, doesn't it?
Well, I counted eight. I was going to say, I counted 8 slots in there, but you say there are already 2 cards built in, aren't they, as you say?
Yeah, there's 6 free slots, as I say, yes. Open PCIe Gen 4 slots is what they say on their website. But it's a mixture, so you've got 4 of the 8X Gen 4 and 2 of the X16 Gen 4. Still can't find out if you get all that bandwidth, or if you put something in the X16 slot, you only get 2 X8s between them. I can't find that anyway yet, but I'm sure it will come out. I would be surprised if you got 2 full X16s and 4 full X8s. That is a lot of bandwidth, considering we didn't have the bandwidth to run multiple monitors at one point.
No, and I think this is the thing. You know, and again, things may change as we go to press and that, but there, you know, in terms of actual real deep technical specifications, there isn't much of them in it, is there, beyond the press style release around it. The Ultra chip, as we know, 2 of the M2 Max chips with Apple's, what's it, Ultra Fusion technology. There's a memory bandwidth up to 800 gigabits gig a second now.
Yes,
so 50% more than the M1 Ultra. So that's really, really impressive. But as you say, what we don't know is there one of those on the PCI lanes?
So we've been talking about discussing how it could, you know, offline, how it would work. And I suspect, like on the original, was it the M1 Pros? They had that memory bus in, or that bus connector. I can't believe, what do they call it?
Yeah, was it the old, they called it Ultra
Infinity
Fusion,
Fabric or Infinity Fabric or something along those lines. They never told anyone until they announced the Max. And I was wondering, is there an extra one on the Ultra, which is then provide, you know, they haven't told anyone about, and that's then providing this bandwidth for all this PCI Express, this I/O connectivity. I'm sure we'll find out at some point, but yeah, it's not obvious. What was obvious is what you can't use those PCI Express lanes for, and it's graphics cards. You can use it for audio and video I/O, networking, storage cards.
This was funny, storage cards.
I don't know. They were vague on that too, but no GPU support. And in fact, from what they were saying, external GPU support has been culled from macOS shortly.
I think Apple have... So my view is, I genuinely don't understand why they've done this. beyond...
Just stick a number of NVIDIA A100s in there and it would be insane.
Well, this is what they were... Well, yeah, but that to come back to that point about NVIDIA, which I was... You kind of raised the point, which I was saying. What was the one thing that they talked... Well, one of the things they mentioned around this particular machine was about... They didn't say it was large language models, did they? They said... They said something different there, but effectively it was AI models, wasn't it?
It was.
But it wasn't LLMs, which are the ones that we see today, ChatGPT and that. They used another acronym, if I recall. But they basically said that the M1 Ultra and its 76 GPUs could basically render the information, wasn't it, as a model faster than a discrete GPU, which I think I said to you, was it this is NVIDIA calling, they'd like a word please.
It's the H100, it costs more than four of those Macs put together.
Yeah, so I was a bit like, yeah, Apple again, you need to be careful what you're saying.
I'd like to see some actual benchmarks on that one.
Yeah. So what they did say was around, you know, in the old Macs they had, was it the Afterburner cards, wasn't it, that we used?
They did, yeah.
Obviously, there's no need for Afterburn anymore because that's built into
it, yeah.
It almost appears that these expansion ports are going to be for things like sound cards, or they're going
to be... Yeah, it's video I.O. I think it's aimed at the professionals, and we're going to come back to that in a minute about why it's not really aimed at the professionals. But yeah, if people want to take in video input, like DaVinci Resolve, they do cards where you can bring in video sources and stuff like that. So I imagine it's aimed at that. And they do say networking, so maybe you can slap a 100 gig network card in there. They've said storage cards, so I presume it's going to be the only way to expand the onboard storage. And storage cards, I'm presuming they just mean SSDs on PCIe expansion slots.
Because I'm guessing they must be, they must be having to do that. I think they must.
There's no NVMe slots, is there? And there's no space to put a 2.5 or 3.5 inch drives in the chassis. So we must be talking about PCI Express SSDs here. Or maybe it'll be something proprietary Apple releases soon.
I just, again, you know, and you say the professional PC era of multiple inputs. But when they talked about the studio, they mentioned around the production Saturday Night Live, didn't they, in America? And they were using studios. Did they say it was post-production or no, it's a live show, isn't it? So it can't be post-production. It was around controlling the feeds and kind of, you know. So if a studio can do that, what the hell is the pro for?
Don't know. It's not for someone who wants more than 192 gig of RAM, though.
No, which the old machine could take up, wasn't it, nearly a terabyte, wouldn't it?
1.5 terabytes.
Yeah.
So if you need a lot of RAM, and that's what threw me. I was like, they're talking about AI modeling, and AI modeling eats RAM, but yet you're limited to 192. Yeah. So your models are only going to be so large before they just won't actually run on it. I don't know. It was a mixed bag. It was great to finally see it. They have finally transitioned away from Intel. I don't think there's anything left, is there? No, that Mac Pro was the last holdout, I believe.
No, that's it. So it was announced. The Intel era is over.
It is. And, you know, it was actually reasonably priced, okay? So it starts at what? Comparatively, compared to the old ones, it starts at $7,000. And even a fully spec'd one, I think, came to $12,399 or something.
Which isn't bad, was it? When you got, was it, you didn't have change at $70,000 last time.
No, exactly. But we are talking, yeah. It's got expandability, but it hasn't really. It's still going to be very limited to what you can do with those slots, I think.
Look, I mean, for those aficionados who, you know, were basically decrying, oh, the pro, well, you know, go out and buy one because you've got one now, basically. My view is this is going to end up like the waste paper bin, you know, the trash can pro. I think you'll be seeing these in a few years' time on eBay. You know what, personally, I'm just going on my own kind of opinion here, but I think, you know, most people who are looking for a higher Mac are going to look at the studio because it's more cost effective.
They will do it. And the people who actually really needed all the bits that the original Mac Pro gave, they've moved on a long time ago. They're not coming back.
No, you know, it's done, you know.
They've moved on to PCs running Linux and Windows because the software's caught up, the hardware is still fine, and you can scale it much more. Okay, bang for buck in the space that takes up, you can't beat that, the max. But when you need to start scaling and adding four or five NVIDIA A100s or whatever, and all these extra cards in, and needing terabytes of storage and, you know, and RAM. Apple doesn't have anything that's going to compete with that.
What I will say, though, is that machine is exceptionally pretty inside.
Oh, well, they are lovely.
What did you see? I don't know if you saw with the picture. So they have got a picture of it where they've got the side of the case off, haven't they? So the M2, the Mac Pro, top left corner, clearly is the CPU with its own dedicated ducting and fan. You've got the, you know, on the right-hand side, you've got right-hand bottom corner, I should say, sort of third of it. You've got all of the I/O expansion ports. But then above that, you've almost got what appears to be like a power bus, haven't you? That looks to high. It looks to me that they had eSATA ports on it and a Molex connector.
I presume it's not eSATA. I just presume it's SATA power. So if you've got a card that needs power, you can plug it in from that.
Well, the images haven't been overly clear, so I couldn't quite see. It just was from a guess. But then also looked like a Molex next to it as well. So,
yeah, I imagine so, and it's lovely black motherboard, isn't it?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful motherboard. Minimalistic Apple thing, you know. Again, they've recycled the chassis from the other one because they weren't selling, so they might as well recycle what was there.
Oh, yeah, so that 12,400 did include the £400 wheels.
Oh, excellent.
As the upgrade, because I was going all out. You need the wheels.
But given, right, you've got it's the same chip as the studio. I keep coming back to this. It's the same chip as the studio. There is nothing, apart from the I/O side of things, there is nothing different about this machine, is there?
No. Yeah, apart from the I/O, the extra 10 gig port and another 4 Thunderbolt ports, that's it. And obviously your expansion slots, but that's it. It is a Mac Studio Ultra.
Well, I was just going to say, why didn't they call it or the Studio Pro?
Because I suppose that would get people's hopes that there was actually going to be a Pro.
Well, perhaps so. But yeah, so there you go. The Mac Pro has made a resurrection from, I don't know where it's been, in limbo somewhere, so to come back. Whether it survives this incarnation, who knows? But what it has done, as we said, is closed out the Intel era of Apple. You know, we are now truly in the throes of the Mac Silicon time. And you know what? It's a glorious time to be alive. You're given, you know, the power of these machines, the actual grunt that we have in them. You know, we've got to my left here, I've got an iPad with an M1 chip in it, which quite frankly is overkill for everything. You know, we've had Apple Silicon, of course, in the phones for many, many years. And those A chips themselves, of course, are exceptionally powerful as well. You know, it is a good time. But yeah, I wouldn't say that Apple are probably ever going to give us figures of how many have sold, but it will be interesting to hear in the next quarterly review what hardware is doing. And I think, you know, extrapolate out of that. Okay, then. So let's talk about software then. So, of course, we have the usual roundup again. You know, it wouldn't be dub-dub if we didn't have iOS, iPad OS now, of course, TV and watch announced as well. So we are on the 17th incarnation of iOS then. And it's, a bit of a... kind of a bit of a, I'd call it a UI overhaul this year, wouldn't you agree?
It was a bit of a fresh lick of paint, wasn't it? Not by much though. A big feature on messaging and voicemail, bizarrely. Lock screens, we're getting some more widgets you can interact with. I think the iPads are getting widgets as well, aren't they, on the lock screen, I should say, like iOS did. There wasn't really massively any standout features.
No, so I think, this was kind of a polish up of iOS 16. And the experience from the beta, I can tell you, is very stable already.
Yeah.
And I think that reason is because I suspect underneath the hood, there's probably more of iOS 16 in this than there was of 15 and 16, if that makes sense. You're right. A couple of the standout features then. We got some new applications, didn't we? So we've got the new journaling application.
We have, yep.
Which is a new app for basically writing, well, they call it a well-being app, don't they? So it can intelligently provide you with suggestions of things to write about, like a diary. But it basically will pull your contacts, your location, things like photos, whether you've been doing workouts, you know, to help you have inspiration to things you can talk about. It's totally encrypted on the phone, Of course, nothing still on the surface there. You know, there can be important things. It'll pull, as I say, pictures. So if you're somewhere on holiday and it knows, you know, you've taken pictures, it'll pull them in. And it will learn over time using the APIs there as well. It is quite a nice, I think, a nice little application. Again, yep. I think Apple have Sherlocked a few people, haven't they, with this?
I think so.
I can't think of one of the apps. There are a few I've read, remember reading somewhere that were there as well. I guess the other one that got a really big over time, interestingly, they talked about three apps in particular that were getting a huge overhaul in their leverage, which was the phone app, which I think threw everybody, didn't it? Messages app and FaceTime. So let's start with the phone then, because that got a couple of interesting updates.
It got there was what they call live voicemail, isn't it? So when someone calls and you don't want to answer, send them to voicemail, and it'll actually start transcribing in real time what they're saying on the voicemail and displaying it on your home screen or wherever you are. And at that point, you can pick up and answer if it's of interest to you.
Now, I thought that was quite impressive.
That looked really cool. We might not see it, though, as it requires, follow the little asterisks, carrier support.
Yes. That's
and not actually many carriers actually give you visual voicemail 15 years later.
No.
I don't get it on free, or I'm on Smarty now because it was free, but just half the price. And they don't have visual voicemail. Is there only like one or two carriers in the UK that have visual voicemail? I think O2 do, don't they? They were the original people.
Yeah.
I want to say Vodafone. I don't know if EE has it. You're on EE, aren't you?
I'm on EE. I've got it. Yeah.
Okay, so it might only be three that don't do it, but you know, we're not the only country where a fair number of carriers don't support it. So will they support us at all? I don't know.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I think that's something we need to bear in mind here. But it is a good way of doing it. You know, I'd like to, to hope we'll come there. The other thing we got was these new, what do they call them? Kind of contact posters, wasn't it?
This is going to be ripe for abuse. But this is basically where you can set what your background looks like in your emoji or whatever. Basically, when you call someone, it appears on their screen how you've said it.
Not how they've said it, is like your contact.
Well, I hope there's an override for that, because that's going to get annoying. But I'm just thinking of the abuse you could do by setting some weird pictures that when you call somebody comes up. I hope there'll be some controls in place for that. But it was also, what's it called? Was it the Contacts app? Which is basically like virtual business cards. You can tap someone's phone with yours and automatically transfer your contact details. Now, obviously, you can decide send. Name, is that what it was called? Yeah. So, I mean, that sounded interesting as well.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So, and AirPlay, obviously, now, AirDrop, basically, as you say, got that overhaul. You know, there's a new sharing thing. Remember, then also now you can share large files. And if you walk away from the network, it'll use the internet to share that file, which is a really good way of doing it. SharePlay API is going to have AirDrop capabilities as well. The other one was Messages as well. So Messages got an overhaul as well. So now you can have audio messages. You can like do swipe to replies.
They're transcribed as well, aren't they?
Yeah, that's good as well. That whole, you know, that drawer at the bottom where it's like full of apps, that's now being completely tucked away, because I think everybody realized that was terrible and nobody could use it.
Really? I thought their implementation of the new one was terrible.
Well, I thought it was slightly better, because at least it wasn't in my way all the time.
But when you click at it, you can't see your messages until you selected something.
That was,
it takes over the entire screen. So you hit a plus button.
You can't really win here, can you?
And it takes over the entire screen, and you don't have to select something.
Yeah, so the other one was, obviously, there was two other features. One was this new kind of thing, you know, like in photos where you can do a long press on a photo image. Cut somebody out. Well, now you can turn them into stickers. The other one that I thought was really interesting, more importantly, was that check-in feature. So you now can sort of tell friends and family if you're going somewhere, like say you've been, you've been to see somebody and you're walking home. You can do a check-in capability that recognizes when you're home and sends them saying that you've safely reached your environment. And if you don't get there in the expected time, and you haven't done anything to, say, you know, delay your journey, it will update your last known location. It will provide an update. But also, cleverly, the same token, if you're, say, driving, wasn't it, or you're on a, say, I think transport or something, and there's a delay, it recognizes that and then adjusts it to think so that, you know, it knows that you're not, something hasn't happened. It's, you actually delayed, have been delayed because the traffic delay, which I thought was a very clever, because you could end up with false positives there, couldn't you?
Of course, yeah.
But again, I think that's a very useful feature. Personally speaking, I'd like to see that implemented. You know, I'm not suggesting it's for any one particular group of people, but I'm sure there are people in society who will find that more useful than others, to be fair.
Yeah. What was the other ones? There was a keyboard one, wasn't
there? We got ducking.
Oh, it's the keyboard. The massive overhaul of how autocorrect works, apparently. So it needs doing. You won't be getting any more ducking, as they said on the...
which I thought was very... Craig was very good there with that.
He was. Funny. Yeah. I'm interested in that because autocorrect definitely needs fixing on iOS. It can be annoying. But yeah, I like to find my one because now you'll be able to share the location of items. So if you're using AirTags, currently, you're the only one that can see them, but now you're able to share it with people in your family, won't you, I believe.
So where are my keys? Well, I'll just send you this item and you can track my keys as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that'll be handy, definitely.
Nicely done. So the other one, obviously, the standout feature, I think, probably before we move on and kind of wrap up here, is the standby feature, which was rumoured, wasn't it, where we were talking about this, where you can put your phone in landscape mode on a dock.
Yes.
And it will then be personalized to show you information in portrait. So like it'll show you a calendar or it'll show you
kind of like a smart display, isn't it?
Yeah. And it'll also though have at nighttime, it'll have like a red light so it doesn't disturb you. And it also has live activities. Now I really like this because for somebody who travels a lot, I would like, you know, plugging this in, especially with always on display, it would be really nice to have that alarm clock. Or clock on the side because you don't always get them in hotels or things like that as well.
See, so, depends how bright it is. I can't stand any light in my room, so that might just annoy me. When we were doing our last team meeting, I spent the first half an hour in my hotel room trying to block all the light out because it was so annoying.
Yeah,
not get a good night's sleep.
No, but the red light here is doesn't affect. Well, I'm not suggesting everybody's in the same boat, but it doesn't cause the same level of effect. But yeah, I guess still to have that information, if it doesn't disturb you, then in your case.
Definitely. But I mean, it did look cool. I mean, I can imagine that having it on my desk in front of me while I'm doing my work day with useful stuff popping up. It might solve that problem that we've been looking at with Gmail.
Possibly,
maybe. So, fingers crossed. But it was a cool idea, definitely. And that's going to work on the iPad as well, they were saying.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. It's going to be very, very.
But the iPad doesn't have an always on display yet.
No, but I've read in the betas, people testing on phones without always on displays, it does work.
Oh, does it? Okay, nice.
Yeah. There were a few other things like offline maps, live stickers. You don't need to say hey before the name beginning with S.
What's the name, yeah.
And we will link to the full press release in the show notes. So then let's move on to iPadOS then, which just a caveat straight away, 99% of the features in iOS have gone to iPadOS, haven't they? So there is only a couple, I guess, call-out ones.
And the same way around. I mean, they talked about interactive widgets, didn't they, on iOS?
Yeah.
iPadOS, but they're coming to iOS as well. So there'll be widgets you can have on your home screen, like normal, because widgets came out on the iPad first, didn't they? But you'll now be able to actually do interaction. So if you want, maybe one of your widgets is a grocery list or something like that, and you can just tick it off from the widget without having to go to the actual app to be able to tick it off. And that's a progression, quite handy.
Nicely done. I think also there was obviously the big one was probably the health application coming across to iPad, which has been redesigned to take advantage of the larger screens. So you get more information there.
Live activities.
Live activities as well.
Isn't it?
Yep. Our favorite tracking application, Flighty, was mentioned.
Yeah.
I think, you know, again, borderline, you know, iPadOS really has taken, you know, the cream of the crop from iOS expected. I guess the other cool thing was the lock screens, customizable lock screens as well, which come across as well from iOS as well. Yeah. So yeah, pretty much nice again, but for like you say, lick of paint overhaul rather than anything major for the iPad.
Yes.
Cool. So TVOS and TVOS also has had a redesign in some areas, not really a massive overhaul of the UI, but mainly around the control center, things like FaceTime.
Isn't it? You'll be able to plug, apparently you can plug cameras and microphones in with the latest release. I don't know if it works on the TV, but I heard that works on the iPad. But they were saying you can use, what do Apple call this? Continuum. Is it Continuum?
Yeah.
Continuity.
Continuity, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah, so you'll be able to launch the FaceTime app on your TV on the big screen, stick your phone in front of it on one of those MagSafe stands, and then obviously it will connect to each other and you can use that for the camera feature. So that looked pretty slick.
I have to say that I personally really like the idea of FaceTime, because we, you know, you and I said before, majority of the people in our family have got an iDevice of some description.
Yeah.
You know, the kids like to FaceTime their grandparents or whatever, or their aunties or whatever. And actually, sometimes, you know, crowded around the iPad and somebody knocks the camera, or you put, or it's on the phone and you pass it to one of the kid, the younger kids, and they kind of
see their ear.
The sky. Yeah. But actually, pushing it to, like I say, if it's a birthday or something like that, pushing it onto the big TV and putting the camera in front of the TV is perfect. Lovely.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It would really, really good. Really. And do you know what? I hate this. I know this is kind of hindsight. It's a great thing. But imagine if we'd had that capability during lockdown with FaceTime. But anyway.
That's not just for that, though. FaceTime, Zoom and WebEx can use that as well.
That's just going to say the whole capability of Zoom. Yeah. Brilliant features there as well.
Yeah.
You know, coming in that as well. So that's going to be really, really good. The obviously around things like is the better controls around to sort of the top right, a proper control center like you get on iOS devices now, so you can get better control around things like headphones, around, you know, AirPods, it's kind of the spatialized stereo. That was something we didn't mention. iOS is around the AirPods. They now have this third option, so if you get noise cancelling, you get transparency mode. There's a new one. I can't remember. It's called Active, wasn't it? I can't remember. Was it Active?
Something like that. Yeah, doesn't it? It notices when you're speaking. Someone's trying to speak to you and can then let that through, but still keep all the background noise out, can it?
Yeah, so it takes the best parts of transparency mode and then kind of, adds in noise cancelling if it gets very loud. And as you say, if somebody's talking to you, it then reduces the volume down so you can hear the voices and have a conversation, and then pulls it back up again when you kind of move away from that. So it is quite good as well. The interesting thing as well was around the tvOS, was that there is a now Find My Remote feature. Apparently an iPhone can find the remote. Apparently, they're not entirely sure how it works. From Apple haven't given much away with it, but it is speculated it might use Bluetooth coming from the remote.
I don't think they stuck a U2 chip in the remote, did they?
No, definitely.
Or wideband, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, so SharePlay got improved as well now. So with this new camera capability, you can do SharePlay, so you can watch the program together and see yourself in the screen. Personally, I've never used SharePlay. I can't think of anything weirder to watch a TV program and see somebody else's face. But there you go.
Yes.
So then, last but not least, on the OS capabilities, Watch OS 10 has been released. And this actually probably was one of the bigger updates, I think, wasn't it, of the software releases?
It looks kind of, it looks like the major overhaul. It looks a lot more bright and colourful and slick and, you know, whizzy, for want of a better word, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of complaints around Watch OS has been around taking advantage of the larger screens, which they will come back to that point in a minute, but more around how do you get to the app. So, you know, kind of on a phone, you swipe through them. On the watch, it's not always quite, you know, how do you get into them? It's you turn the crown, well, that takes you to all apps. If I swipe up, that gives me the control center. If I swipe across, I get faces. You know, how do I get to the applications that are running properly? So now, you know, with the capability, you now have them in a smart stack. So any face does that. You just spin the digital crown and it has a little stack of the applications that you've got. Much easier, especially if you're getting things like timers, things like that. There's new widgets. So widgets can now include groups of complications. So complications, if you're unsure what they are, those are the little applications that run on that watch face, so like the timer or the health or heart. So we got that as well. We got a new workout capability. So cycling was really the main one there, wasn't it? Cycling and golf, I should say. There's new live activities. There's a new experience to tie in. Actually, with cycling, the phone came into play. They didn't it as well.
Mounting the phone to
bikes. More workout APIs to access more high frequency motion data, I think was one thing, especially for golf and things like that. We talked about the health application. So again, an interesting one was mental health focus, wasn't it? So kind of state of mind logging, which pulls in other contextual information to kind of identify, I think what they said was risk of anxiety or depression that you could then share with a trusted health provider. Not as much information has come out of that yet. So I'm interested to see how that's going to be.
And the health app's actually come to iPad as well, isn't it?
Data
on the larger screen.
So the other one was around vision health. So about to test ambient sensors to kind of check your eyesight, which again, not masses of information was shown on that. It will use the iPad and iPhone and iPad true depth cameras to measure your disc screen reading distance. So it can test for short side and long sideness. So again, that'll time with the watch around, I guess, you know, where you're holding it and things like that. So all very interesting approaches there. The one thing I will say is I was disappointed that they haven't taken advantage of the Ultra screen to give you a more customized approach with the Ultra. That's
it
my
didn't really show idea. Much of the Ultra. Pretty much all of it was on the Watch 8 or a Watch 8 size device.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, we'll see. It was a nice collection of updates. I'll be looking to see, one, does my watch support it? Because I didn't mention it, obviously. iOS 17 and iPad 17 dropped quite a lot of support for older devices, didn't it?
They did, but I will caveat that. A lot of them were devices that were over 5 years old.
Yeah, I mean, so on iOS 17, if you had an iPhone 8 or an X, they're no longer supported. They've been dropped. Obviously, they were supported with 16.5. Annoyingly, with iPad OS 17, my iPad Pro is no longer supported. So they've dropped, first-gen iPad Pros? And anything below, a sixth-gen iPad. So they dropped quite a lot out that did run on 16.
Yeah, which is frustrating. I agree with you on that point.
Because my iPad Pro doesn't slow down on iOS 16. It just chugs for everything. There's no reason it couldn't run 17.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Considering nothing's really changed.
No. I think, you know, nothing major has changed in that sense. It's just Apple being Apple, isn't it?
And in all fairness, when did I buy mine? I think it might have been... I've got the 10.5 first release, so it's probably 2017 or 18. So, I mean, it has had a fair amount of updates. It's just annoying, I know, for the fact it could run it without any problems.
Yeah, I think, you know, you probably could get away with it. And I question, as you say, but I think that, again, that's Apple trying to justify upgrade cycles, isn't it?
It is.
You know, and it wouldn't be Apple if they didn't do this, would it? You know, let's be honest.
No, exactly, yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, I guess there are ways around it. We won't talk about that here. but yeah, it's frustrating for people, as you say, older devices that you know, on that point as well.
Yeah.
So I guess on that side, Sonoma. Yeah, so that takes it into Sonoma. So macOS Sonoma then. They talked about wine regions. I shouted out Napa on the chat.
You did, yeah.
And then was promptly made to eat those words. Well, I also said to you that when the Mac Pro was there, I said, could you please pass me some ketchup? I need to eat my hat. because we didn't see that coming. So macOS Sonoma then is, again, the latest update to macOS. So this is macOS 14. Again, you know, what we've seen here is really just an evolution of the current
widgets.
macOS 13. Widgets are probably the biggest seller here. Interestingly, some of the widgets there don't require the apps to be installed on your macOS device. They can be on your phone, and if it's within Presence or on the same network, isn't it, as well?
And you can put them onto the desktop, can't you? So they don't have to be in the bar on the side anymore. You can drag those into your desktop. And then when you open up an app, you know, it's in the forefront, it makes the widgets, transparent by the look of it?
That's the one,
yeah. You can still kind of see them, but obviously they don't take over the screen.
No, and, you know... there's other good standout features here. So what else do we get? We got new predictive text game. Ah, yes. First, game mode. So yes, there's a big push for gaming. So interesting. Hojima, what's his name? The guy behind Metal Gear Solid, Death Stranding, and many other amazing, amazing titles, was a speaker of the event, and he showed off the director's cut of Death Stranding playing natively on the Mac, wasn't it? And this is to do with the new Metal engine, but also the new porting engine that Apple have built to allow developers to assess their games and be able to port them across in record time.
They've also got a translation engine, haven't they? So they basically contributed, I think, 30,000 lines of code to Wine. And they're now using that so they can translate DirectX 12 calls in real time to Metal.
That's pretty impressive.
It is. And that will actually, because it's Wine's open source and Apple contributes, will actually benefit the wider audience for once, not just people on a Mac. Just having that ability to translate DirectX 12 on the fly. I'm sure they can move it away from Metal into other things as well.
Yeah, I won't lie to you. I was a bit hesitant. I was like, but Death Stranding is a pretty game. It's not obviously a current game, but it is a pretty game, and it is quite. I mean, I've run it on the PC. It does take a little bit of grunt to run it, but it looks good. It'd be interesting to see, what comes next. He said that they were looking to release other titles, didn't they? And they may bring some. They may do first party releases for the Mac, which would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
What I would say though is, don't get. They talked. Oh, the other thing was about better polling, wasn't it, around Bluetooth and PS5? Xbox and PS5 Bluetooth controllers. So better.
Well, then game mode also priorities what games access to CPU and GPU resources, doesn't it? So
yeah. So the other really good interesting feature was we now have. Well, I say interesting feature. I'll caveat that with this is not a new feature for other browsers, but we've now got profiles in Safari. So like you can have different profiles like Firefox. You can now have web apps on macOS. So those of us in the mobile world have known about web apps for a long time, so effectively running a lockdown web browser with a single web page, they can be now in the dock on macOS. Again, nothing really new there. The other probably for me, and I think perhaps yourself, was the standout one was the new presenter overlay for Zoom and Teams. So this was really interesting. So this is imagine we're on a Zoom call now. My picture or your picture would be, if I was speaking, would be a little square, wouldn't it? And it's really difficult because you can't see what you're doing. So what they've done now is they've added this new mode in that gives you an overlay. So you can either have it that you are your face remains on camera in a more prominent place, or you can appear to sort of almost stand in front of your slides, can't you?
Yes.
To present like a weather presenter kind of view, isn't it?
It virtually cuts you out of your background and slaps you over your slides.
And it looked really, really good. Now, Zoom, I think, was it WebEx, Zoom and Teams have already got the API.
Yeah, there's an API, isn't there? So developers can use it.
And there's also interesting ones. If you're on a Mac, you can now use reactions as well. So you can put your hands into a heart shape and it does that, or you can clap, wasn't it? Other things like that. So really kind of more interactivity around those sort of presentations, Zoom presentations as well. So I quite like that. Safari, I think, again, was a lot of time we spent on Safari. We talked around that. Again, nothing major from an overhaul perspective, really, for that. So then, I'm not going to fire up the tech rant rumor mill because... It is now real. So we now have the new AR/VR headset. And Carl, please tell me, what is it called?
The Vision Pro.
We got the Pro already.
And he did, Tim Cook said, and one more thing. I never thought I'd hear him say it.
Woo!
He did. I was like, is he going to say it? Because obviously you had to disappear for that.
Yeah,
point,
I had to jump off that.
I was like, he said it. But yeah, we got the Vision Pro, which isn't a VR AR headset. It's the dawn of spatial computing.
And my God, it is an odd world that we are about to enter.
It is, but I mean, it looked like a stunning bit of kit. Now, it's very slick. It looks like it's a single piece of wraparound glass, single piece of aluminium body. It actually looks like a watch from the side because it's got the dial, hasn't it? What do they call it?
Like a digital crown, wouldn't it?
A digital crown. It's got the crown on top. So it actually can look quite like a watch from the side, but it looks like a very good bit of kit, apart from the cable.
The battery bag.
The battery bag. They didn't really mention it through the entire presentation, did they? Ignoring that part. So they decided they're going to put the battery in your pocket and have a cable going up to the headset so that you don't have so much weight on it. So I can see the reasons for it. Because they've gone with premium materials, they are going to be heavier. But it looks like they've got a nice, it looks like a wool bit around the back, doesn't it? The band to keep it in.
Very similar to the Ultra Watch straps.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Yeah. That's what I was trying to think of. It's also got a giant display on the front, on the outside, called EyeSight. And basically what that does, it uses all these cameras on the inside to relay what your eyes are doing to the outside. So if you are in AR, it's letting people know that you can actually see them and where you're looking. Now, if you're in VR, the front display just goes all blurry and wishy-washy colours, doesn't it? Let people know you're actually in VR and you can't see or interact with them. But there was some stunning hardware in there. The screens are the standout part. They're micro OLED, 4K per eye, wide color, HDR. But apparently they're so dense that in the space of a single pixel on an iPhone, they've managed to fit 64 pixels on this Vision Pro.
Unbelievable.
That unbelievable. Dense. Apparently, you can't see those. There's no screen door effects. You can't see any pixels. Yeah, and of course, they've got LiDAR. They've got true depth for mapping out the environment when you're doing AR. They've got these super high definition pass-through cameras. So apparently, it just looks like real life, allegedly, when you're doing the pass-through. They've got spatial audio and audio ray tracing. So I think that's a bit like... I don't know if it does this on the HomePods, but I know on Sonos, you can do true mapping or whatever. And basically, you wander around your room and it maps out your space using audio, so it gives you the best sound. But it seems like it's quite like that one. What else have they got? You can add a light shroud around to keep completely in. It looks like they've got a proper IPD adjustment, so you can move the lenses left and right to get them right to proper hardware ones, not in software, which is great. If you wear actual glasses, you can get custom prescription inserts from Zeiss. But I have heard they're going to be quite pricey and won't support everything. And I have a feeling they won't support mine because my eyes are quite bad. But I've heard they're going to be between $300 and $600 a pop.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, you know, the use case here was that basically everything, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, yeah, then it's got an M2 in it, hasn't it? They haven't given the specs of the M2 in it, but it's M2 class one.
With a custom coprocessor.
R1 chip that's handling all those sensors, because apparently there's 12 cameras and multiple other sensors going, so it's processing all that in real time. But yeah, what were they showing? They showed pretty much everything. So they showed you looking at photos, watching videos on a giant 100-inch screen or whatever, gaming and stuff, or interacting with it. FaceTime, we'll talk about FaceTime in a minute, how that one works. What else do they show? Just general stuff, so you can bring your screen in from your Mac and work on it and have multiple virtual screens. You can have apps, take your iOS or iPad apps, and they'll run on it, won't they, as well. You can use a virtual key, but the whole interaction bit is all using your eyes.
That's right. There's nothing else. It's all...
There's no controllers like your Quest, is there? You just look at where you want to, and apparently the eye tracking is brilliant. And then you just pinch your finger together. You don't have to have it out in front of you. They were showing someone just sitting on the couch and just had their hands in their lap, didn't they? And they just pinched to select.
Yeah, and the same person was it signing their name as well, wasn't it? On a document, again, just writing in thin air. You know, very cleverly done, clear, responsive here. There was one picture that made me chuckle, though, was somebody sat on a plane with a headset on, which was like, really? And they've got the AirPods in. I don't see that happening.
No, what else was there? A virtual keyboard is one other input, but you can actually connect Bluetooth keyboards and mice, because if you have pass-through, you can actually see what you're typing. So if you need to do some real work, maybe you've brought your screen over from your Mac, and you're then working on it, you can actually use a proper keyboard and mouse, which was nice. Battery life, not so great.
No, that wasn't really mentioned, though, was it? Like you said,
no, apparently it wasn't enough to actually watch the entire keynote speech, because it only lasts 2 hours. The keynote was 2 hours 5, or something along those lines.
I'm guessing you must be able to plug it in, though, sure.
Yeah, apparently there's a pass-through, so you can plug a USB-C, I think, into the battery pack and just plug it into the wall, and you'll have what do they call it? All day battery life. They called that. Woo! I was like, that's not really all day battery life.
Well, that's called power.
Called plugged in. That's not battery power. But all right.
Come back to the Face ID thing. It's got a new name, isn't it?
There's Optic ID. They use for authentication. Yeah. So that's they scan your retina, because even identical twins, the retinas are different. So everyone has a unique retina. So they're using that instead of Face ID or Touch ID. The other thing to do, so FaceTime, that was it. Because I was trying to think, how do you do a FaceTime call when you're wearing the headset and there's no camera looking at you? Well, as part of the setup process, you point the headset towards you, and it uses its LiDAR and its front cameras to map your features and everything, and then it generates an AI digital avatar, a lifelike version of you, apparently. Looked a bit spooky.
Yeah, so go on then. For the cost of it, I think...
We've not talked cost, but yeah, the cost of it. The cost is starting at $3,499. They didn't show this on the live feed, but people had recorded the people who were there in person were recording it. There was a lot of booing at the price, wasn't there?
Apparently so.
But I mean, Apple have yeah, Apple have made it really, really slick. Don't get me wrong. I would love one. I can't justify £3,500. And we really know that's going to be $3,500. We know that's going to be £4,000 when it hits the UK, no doubt. And that's a starting app price. So I presume they're going to not have to. I presume the only way it will go up is storage, I imagine. Maybe RAM.
Again, they haven't been clear. They haven't been forthcoming on those areas as well. It was very much a kind of a high level approach to it. But yeah, I mean, of course, as more details come out and I get, you know, it's going to be available
next year.
So we'll see more information drip feed out, I think, going forward.
And they are putting out dev units as well, aren't they? So we'll probably get some more information that way.
I think so. And I wouldn't be surprised that they'll probably talk about it again in the keynotes later in the year, you know, around iOS and things like that, because they'll probably be telling.
They'll definitely speak about it again at the main Apple event in September, won't they?
Exactly, yeah. So look, you know, for all of the rumors, they were true. It isn't Reality OS. It isn't Reality Pro. It is Vision Pro running Vision OS. And it is, quite frankly, the best AR/VR headset, not quite yet available on the market today. But Apple have done what they do with every single industry they enter or vertical they enter. Is, you know, Apple don't think they define a market. They did in their early days. But not anymore. Apple now is about establishing a market trend and then making it the best they can. And quite frankly, you know, on the face of it, what we see today with Vision Pro, if it is anywhere close to what we see in those demos, it is going to be a phenomenal AR/VR headset. Definitely. But of course, time will tell, and I guess real world usage, of course, as well, will give us a better perspective on that. But for $3,500, it should be.
Definitely, it's tad pricey.
So then, I think that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today. You know, we've got all of the info links to all of the stuff we've talked about in our show notes. Of course, you know, we're probably going to spend several hours just going through the fine out points, but I think we wanted to cover and give you that snapshot whilst you're listening to this, wherever that might be, in the train, the car, in the bath, whatever you do, listening to podcasts. So with that then, we'll be back next week for episode 137, where we will be back with the latest updates and news from around the tech world. I can tell you today, we've already got some information about Meta, Nintendo, Neuralink, AMD already lined up to talk to you about, and I'm sure the Tech Wrap Rumor Mill will also make a welcome return next week. So with that, of course, you can find all of our show notes at techrant.online. We're still on Twitter at Weekly Tech Rant, and you know, wherever you get your podcast from, if you want to share this with your friends, whatever platform they may listen on. So I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all.